This is Let's Talk Business with your host, Mark Ebinger. Now, here's Mark.
Welcome to Let's Talk Business, a show that highlights and promotes entrepreneurs to learn more about their vision, goals, and marketing strategy. Coming up on the show today, we're going to talk about the reality of being in the real estate investment and renovation business. In studio with us today is Karina Ives and Shalara McKenzie with Green Hub Living. Ladies, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Excited to have you guys here. I'm your host, Mark Ebinger, the owner of Krukus Virtual Staffing, a company that specializes in hiring virtual assistants from outside the United States.
And I'm Kian Frith, co-host of the podcast and also the CEO of KV Impact Consulting. We also include, as part of our professional services, a 45-minute 100K challenge. So if you're interested in finding 100,000 in any business, give me 45 minutes and I'll find it for you.
A quick reminder to follow the Let's Talk Business podcast on all major podcast platforms and social media where you can catch video versions of the show. You can get to everything easily from our website at satalkradio.com. Now, if you're going to be in the San Antonio area on May 16th, be sure to join us for the next Let's Talk Business Mega Mixer, which is going to be over at Project Cowork Central. We're expecting 150 to 200 business owners and entrepreneurs on site to mix, mingle, and connect with each other to do more business. You can get to all the information on our website at satalkradio.com. Now, a quick shout out to Emil Sarfani and Project Cowork for sponsoring the venue for the upcoming Let's Talk Business Mega Mixer on May 16th. Project Cowork is a post-pandemic company that offers flexible workspaces dedicated to supporting the evolving needs of hybrid, team-oriented, and tech-forward businesses. We've got a lot of positive feedback from the last event that we did over there. They loved it. The atrium area is great. The one meeting room that we used off to the side there was really, really good. So we decided to go ahead and use them again, and they're going to be providing the space for us. So if you're looking for a high-end, affordable private office and conference space here in San Antonio, I recommend to reach out to Emil and the Project Cowork team and take a tour of one of their amazing facilities because they have one in Castle Hills and over there by the old San Francisco Steakhouse. You can visit their website at projectcowork.com or call them at 210-942-0113. That's 210-942-0113. Also want to give a quick shout out to Lacho Enriquez and Adam Gonzalez, two new connections on LinkedIn. Lacho is the owner of We Removers, a carpet cleaning company here in San Antonio, Texas. And Adam Gonzalez is the owner of Adam Gonzalez Insurance Agency, also here in San Antonio. So I'm excited to connect with you guys and look forward to doing some networking. All right, So Shalara and Karina, you guys are both it's a family-owned business. So tell me, whoever wants to go first, kind of how you got into Green Hub Living. What was that journey to there?
Yeah, so our granddad was an environmental scientist, and so we always had a little bit of interest in sustainability and the environment. And we were doing separate things in 2020, and it was actually our mom's idea to get together and do flipping houses, and I was selling a house at the time, and Karina had a business degree, and we kind of put our heads together and decided to make a difference. I had found out that 40% of our carbon emissions come from real estate, 20% from commercial, and 20% from residential, and you can actually make a big difference by making the efficiency of older homes better. You can do more by improving older homes, excuse me, than by building net zero homes. So,
and right now, there's a whole lot more existing homes that need those kind of updates and energy efficiency upgrades versus the current homes being built. They're built pretty well. So we try and do our part to fix what's already there because it definitely costs less to fix what's already there than to completely redo it.
Okay, so that's like the energy efficiency side, maybe some rehab stuff. Mm-hmm. But you also are involved in real estate flipping and that kind of stuff as well. So how did that kind of mold together or come together?
So we look for homes that need efficiency improvements, new insulation, new roof, HVAC, water heaters, all those things can make a big difference in the house. And especially with so many people putting solar panel systems on their house, they put these massive systems on these really inefficient houses, and it's an expensive waste of money. What you should do first, that is our goal for homeowners who aren't selling that we're talking to, is plan out over the next 6 or 7 years. You know, you're going to need to replace your water heater in maybe 5 years. Maybe your HVAC has another 3. Plan those efficiency improvements and plan to get a system that matches a more efficient home, the same home, but a more efficient version. So you can get a smaller solar system put on there and save money along the way.
And at some point you guys actually bought a home. and you're flipping it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that, how did, what was the first one of those? When, how did that come together?
So the first one was actually Shalara's home. Okay. When we got started, it was February of 2020. And right before we were, you know, the housing market went absolutely ludicrous. But we were actually getting ready to sell her home, and she had a renter in there. And so we, once the renter moved out, we kind of fixed it up, did a couple of things. A lot of people were opening up walls. We actually put a wall in to create a home office and ended up selling the home within 2 days. Mm-hmm. So we were really successful at that. We've done on average about one house a year. But we are really focusing on helping people more than anything. And so we try and find people whose home may look distressed on the outside. Oftentimes there's some kind of a financial something happening to cause that to happen. And so what we do is we specialize in providing solutions for those really expensive problems that a lot of them may be facing.
Give me an example of a problem you're talking about.
So some of the more common problems that we help with are things like probate, or if you are facing foreclosure or going through a divorce. So with probate, we have a lot of people who end up, they have a loved one who passed on and they may not have had a will. And so the house ends up in the legal system.
Or it's not a valid will.
Yeah, or not a valid will. We actually have one lady in New Braunfels whose husband passed and he had a typed out will that he signed. And that is pretty much no good.
Can't
they need a handwritten will. Anyone who's listening, you need a handwritten, dated, and signed will. You can probate those things.
Or it can be notarized.
Or you can get it notarized and witnessed. But your best bet, if nothing else, handwriting out something that says, I want to leave all my belongings to my current wife. Because right now, her husband bought this house 15 years ago, and his adult children, who have never lived in it, now have a claim on this home. So she's going through the whole probate process to try and resolve that, and we help her out by either providing people who can find the heirs if we need to track down people, or we have attorneys that we work with to try and resolve those issues.
How do you make money doing that, though?
We usually have some kind of an agreement where we will purchase the house. Right. So we're helping her so that she can move out. And with this particular situation, we're also doing an owner-financed rehab. So she'll actually own the house all through the rehab, and we kind of use her. She gets to be the bank, basically. So she'll get a monthly check from us while we rehab the house, and once the house sells, she gets the full amount that we agreed on.
Now, how come she's getting a check from you guys while the rehab's going on?
Well, we don't have to borrow the money to purchase the home.
We don't need to borrow the $200,000 to purchase it or use the $200,000 to purchase it. So she's our lender.
Okay.
We actually have a mortgage that we'll give her a note and everything to protect her amount. And then when it closes after the rehab, she'll collect the full amount. It's a balloon payment.
Everything goes through escrow, so there's, you know, a full contract documenting everything. We have a note securing the house, and...
But she can't afford the foundation repair it needs. She can't, you know, there's some work that needs to be done on the house that she can't afford, and she's done with it.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, her goal is to get out of the house.
Yes. Yeah.
And you guys are helping her do this without getting shafted on the way out.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. Because it's a lot of time and energy to go through those processes. And for us, we don't get paid until the very end. So, I mean, we're talking sometimes 6 months to a year on some of these projects that we don't get paid until that house is actually finished and sold, and we don't start until that time frame.
So can you conceptualize your ideal client?
Oh, our ideal client. Our ideal client is someone who is looking for a solution. They're in some kind of a financial distress to where they might have lost their job or, you know, whatever circumstances. They got a divorce. They're needing out of their home, and they don't think that it'll sell at retail value. So most homeowners right now are looking for something that they can move in ready. They don't even want to have to paint. And so what we do is we'll come in and we can help them. If they are able to maintain the house, then we don't have to spend as much. We can get them more money by having them be the bank, and we renovate it and then we sell it together. Otherwise, we will purchase the home and then renovate it and sell it. So our ideal clients... Typically, they're looking to move out. Starting later in the summer, we're actually going to be looking for clients who are looking to stay in their homes and be able to help them renovate their home for their purposes, whether they're moving in or end-of-life care, like long-term planning, whatever the situation may be.
But the house really needs to need work. Mm-hmm. We're looking for houses that need improvements, some appreciation, you know, in that. Otherwise, you know, if everything's already fixed up, there's only so much we can do and have a good deal for everybody.
But I mean, you've got two aspects going on here. You said before about the number of houses that aren't energy efficient here in San Antonio. If you quantify that, how many houses are you talking about here in San Antonio that need better energy efficiency? They need to be brought up to date.
So the last statistic we saw was that 1% of houses are net zero.
Oh, well, net zero is a whole different thing. So anything built after 2000 is going to be pretty efficient.
Okay, so pre-2000. Yeah. So how many houses are you talking about?
I could guess at 70%.
70% of San Antonio probably needs to be renovated.
And so on that side, that's your target market. Every single one of those, just from an energy efficiency perspective.
Right.
But also because they're probably pre-2000, they're also not just up for energy efficiency, they're up for the whole
update, cosmetic improvements.
Everything.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Wow. You got a great opportunity.
Yes, there's a lot of available houses that need work. What there's a shortage of are people selling them. They want to stay in their houses. They're scared of the interest rates. You know, there was the buying frenzy of 2020 and 2021 and all that stuff, and people scooped up real estate and, you know, aggravated the housing shortage we already have. So there is a shortage of houses, and a lot of people are moving toward new construction because of that. And we're still heavily focused on, you have an older house, we definitely want to take a look. And we, you know, I know real estate investors have a reputation. We've dealt with investors who had horribly low offers, and we actually are able to offer people more or exactly what they're asking sometimes. We had the house in New Braunfels. She said a number, and we said yes. And it's really exciting when we get to do that, because usually it's, you know, 20, 30 under, and they're like, well, I'll just sell it for more. And, you know, it's a little bit of haggling. But we have competitive prices, better than a lot of real estate investors.
Okay. So that's what's setting you apart from your competitors then, and what you're going about here, because you can offer a good price for the house. And still manage to do everything you need to do and turn a profit.
So we actually pride ourselves on giving our highest and best offer. We do not try and get the lowest that anyone will accept. We look at the numbers. We explain how we came to our numbers. Like, your roof is, you know, 15 years old. We're going to have to replace it. They're not going to buy a house like this. We're not going to get it funded. And so we try our best to help the homeowner understand where that money is going and why our number came to that point. And we do our best to give them our absolute highest. And, you know, from that point, you know, a lot of times they will still want to work with us just because we are upfront and honest in how we come to our numbers and how we go about doing things.
Yeah. That whole upfront honesty, transparency. I mean, awesome. Hey, so I love your approach. And I love the fact that you're offering up something that's really competitive. That there's a big thing going on my head right this second. You said on some of your jobs, it's like 6 months to 12 months before you get paid. Now, as an accountant working in a business, if I said, they're selling X widget and it's going to take 6 months or 12 months for the cash to come in, I'm like, what?
Yeah.
So is there a danger that you're a very successful business on paper because you're able to do all this and the clients love you, but actually your cash flow is just...
Absolutely. There are times where you're like, it was
interesting to see both of your faces to change there. Okay. So I've hit the kind of like the nail on the head there.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So how do you manage that?
So our third partner.
Please don't say wing and a prayer.
No. No, our third partner, Renee, has a absolutely fantastic credit score. And we do a lot of work with lenders to manage the funding and everything of our projects, and our accountant figures out the rest. We would not do anything without them.
Right.
So this is not a business where you want to be trying to guess and work your way through and muddle through, because you will be in huge amounts of
trouble. It's high risk.
Oh, yes.
It is. And when you have a project go over budget and over time, it does get tight. And we've had times where it's like waiting for a deal to close, you know, so that things can move forward. But one of the things we learned very early on was not to use all of our money all at once. Mm-hmm. You use a part of your money and use someone else's money on the rest of it so that you can spread your money out a lot more and not have those tight times.
Yeah. Are you guys able to get loans on accounts receivable or something like that? I don't know if that's
receivable.
Where you were going.
No, we do cash-based lending. Mm-hmm. So we'll put $25,000 in and get a $50,000 loan from the bank, or use IRAs, or we'll use hard money lenders.
Lending.
That's what it's called. Asset. what did I say?
Asset-based lending. Mm-hmm. Some of our lenders will actually lend to us based on the fact that we have a house. So it's a secured asset that they can give a, you know, if anything goes wrong, they can foreclose. So they're okay with that. But almost always they want to see some amount of money in the bank that they will be able to use as collateral. It just makes everyone more comfortable in general. So
is that getting to where you were talking about? It's like managing your cash flow?
Yeah. So it's kind of nice to hear this. You guys haven't been operating for very long.
4 years.
4 years.
Yeah. So this is good to hear. But at the same time, the pressure on you all the time must be immense because you have to work to loan terms. You don't want to go beyond because of probably penalties. It's going to get costly. So how do you manage each project? So like at the moment, how many projects do you have on the go?
We usually have two projects at least that we're working at a time, closing a deal a year.
Okay, so you're working on two at a time. How are you managing those projects to make sure that you're putting quality in, but you're not paying too much, that you're able to pay the vendors on time, you know, and everything gets balanced up? You know, who's managing that process? How are you going about that?
Oh, all that goes in upfront. We have a detailed scope of work that we work out with our contractor. What's everything going to cost? What'll have delays? You know, there was a time period where you had to order windows as soon as it was closed, you know, and all that stuff. So the detailed scope of work, and then we reward them for finishing quickly, and we penalize at times if it goes over. So you get the contractor, you incentivize the progress of the job that way. Okay. And the draw schedule, if you orchestrate it with the lender and inspectors, you can avoid a lot of things going on a long time because you book with the contractor, okay, the inspector's coming on Thursday, the draw will be on Friday, and you kind of keep each other moving forward. Okay. I would say is the best way to keep the jobs from getting really jumbled. Now, they have.
Sure. Now, sorry, can I just go back a smidge here? Because, like, what you ladies have learned in a very short period of time is massive. Absolutely massive. What was the background before you came into property then?
So I was in the Air Force, and then I spent 3 years working at Lowe's because I always knew I wanted to do building my own home. And my dad was a plumber, and I used to go on the job sites with him. And we come from a trades family. So I've always had an interest in those kind of things. So I spent 3 years at Lowe's learning a lot about plumbing and appliances and hardware and all those kind of things. And
do we want to go into that? I'm not sure where she's going, but my background, I was also military.
Okay.
I was in the Army, and then I was studying physics and biology at UTSA. And I was looking at specifically the physics part of it, looking at all the different things you could do with environmental science and applying that. And I really wanted to, there's so much talk about being more sustainable, and so many people in academia saying that, oh, you should just do better. Industry should do better. Businesses should do more and all this stuff. And they don't realize the reality of trying to implement these solutions in a dynamic, you know, economy when you have all these competitors and all these expenses and all this stuff. And we wanted to find a way to actually do it, not just tell other people you should buy this more expensive thing because it's better for the earth. We wanted to do it in a way that was competitive and would provoke other people to step up and do the same thing. That's the goal of the company, ultimately. And we were willing to self-fund it for a while to find, our stride and get going in order to succeed and promote it to get other people to do the same.
Sure. I like the fact there is some background, the trades background. That makes a big difference to what you're doing here because you know you're not coming up. Apologize for the slight pun here, but you're not green into this. Do you know what I mean? You understand the trades, which makes a difference in what you're expecting then from the people who are coming onto site. You probably know, wait a minute, what are you doing there? That's not how that should be done, you know?
Yeah,
and this is what we expect. This is the standard we want you to be working to. And I love the fact you're rewarding people, you know, for actually doing things early. I mean, that's great, you know?
We try and motivate and incentivize the people who work with us because it keeps them happy and it keeps things going smoothly.
Sure.
And so our mom also had a background in staging, and she's currently working on her interior design certification. And I also have a bachelor's in business management. So that was kind of the majority of what made us think that we could start a real estate business and kind of be successful.
Nice.
So your focus is the turning over the homes, right? I mean, that's your main focus.
Yes.
How many did I hear right? You have two projects that you're working on a year? In a whole year, two projects?
Usually finishing one a year, and we have two that are ongoing at a time.
What's your goal? How many do you want to be doing?
I'd love to be doing five or six a year.
Okay.
We Took a little bit of time off this past year for personal reasons, and that's one of the downsides of the family business is when something happens to the family, it happens to all of us.
And it happens as a business.
So we did turn off our marketing last October, November, and just picked it back up again in February. So we're making offers and looking for stuff right now and just waiting to find one that'll close before the summer.
Yep. So if we can just look at averages, not specifics, what would be, how much can you, a person in your business make from one job? I mean, what's the, I'm trying to figure out how much money
20,
you can make 000. In a year.
At least 20,000 a job. That's a pretty typical number. We'll have really small jobs where you see $15,000 to $18,000 profit.
Okay.
But 20 to 30 is very normal for us. If you, there's a profit column on the chart that I was showing you.
So,
if
you 30, see right 000, here, this yeah, is the I average that profit before, amount. When we were looking at before the show, and I picked that up.
Did you want to see that?
I suppose that what I'm interested in here then is like, well, how does that sustain a business? You're only doing two of those a year.
Right. So we were self-funded for a while.
Yeah.
And we just started getting to the point where our systems are regular enough.
Sure. Because, I mean, we started from scratch. We had to build all of our systems from our lead generation to our marketing funnels. Like, all of those things had to be built out.
No, I totally get that. And hats off to you for what you've done here. I'm kind of just wondering, like, I'm sorry, this is the CFO and me coming through. Like, so the vision is to get to five a year. Mm-hmm. Five a year at 20,000?
That's my question.
Supporting the family? I'm like,
how does
really?
That work?
Right.
Yeah, how's that work?
That's just us.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's just us. You know, ideally, that'll be a starting point, and from there, we will be able to grow as we are able to hire more people and do more tasks.
Okay.
You know, we'll be scaling up as we grow.
Okay. Awesome.
Beyond five and six
yes.
a year.
Right.
I'm thinking
right.
five or six
mine,
a month.
One is like 20 a year. So, yeah. like minimum.
Okay.
Okay. So, is there a bit of a difference of opinion going on? So, like, actually across the family? Okay. Yeah. Like,
she's
I like
the
smile.
Analyst. I'm the driver. So, you're going to hear bigger numbers coming from me because I have like those bigger goals.
Sure.
And I'm like, let's go. Come on.
Okay. But I suppose collectively, though, the two of you with mom mm-hmm. as well going, okay, what does this business look like in 3 years' time? Mm-hmm. What is that vision? You know, is the mission about really encouraging that the whole green living and, you know, we're going to see how it grows? Or, you know, surely there has to be some dollars associated to this.
Of course.
It's like in three
yeah.
years' time, five
yeah.
years' time.
We can only float it for so long. So where my number versus her number is coming from, our goal is definitely closing one deal a month by the end of the year. But when you look at the numbers, how many people we have to talk to, how many offers we have to make, how many, you know, when you get into our KPIs, our ability is about one every 2 months right now based on the, you know, it takes about 300 conversations before we have a closed deal. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's
That's
lot of conversations.
25 offers a week for, 25 offers a day for one deal a month.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to find 25 people to talk to every single day.
We're a little limited.
So when we have more people that we can hire
I see your face. You're like, that's too many.
You're doing math. There's a reason we're at one
this
a year.
This is his world.
Yeah, there's a lot of math going on in my head.
Just, for moment. Qualification, I've been through this with Kian.
Yep.
This is what he does.
Yeah.
So,
The numbers are interesting, very interesting. If you want to scale this and make this bigger, there's something that I think needs to be tweaked. It sounds like there's a
and
few dials that need to be tweaked.
It's an ongoing thing.
I get it.
It's an adapting, living, thriving thing that we're creating, and we just keep trying to help it learn and adjust things along the way so that it can be more efficient and productive.
Sure. I mean, there's an overarching aspect here that I think is incredible, is the whole green living side of it, of taking something that is old and worn out and can be refreshed and refurbed. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really admirable now, and it can be done low cost as well. And actually bring those houses up to level. I'm thinking about when we had the guys on talking about the pickleball hall, pickleball hall, and that whole new green concept. And the opportunity here is enormous for you ladies,
right.
You know? And that's why I'm like, one in 25? And like, no, it's just, something doesn't sound quite right with it all, you know? I get it. Is it a cultural thing here in Texas? You go, I don't need to do green living, you know, because, you know.
Much. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's economics. You're talking about San Antonio, largely blue-collar town. Austin maybe be a little bit different mindset over there, but it comes down to economics here and where are people spending their money and what are they willing to spend it on and what's the ROI. We may not say what's the ROI, but we want to know what am I going to get out of this. Mm-hmm. If I spend $20,000 on an AC unit, how long is it going to, I mean, is it going to make my payment go down enough to really justify those kind of expenses?
Yeah.
That's just the reality of which I see here in San Antonio and how people think. Because I think the same way.
Sure.
It's ROI big time.
It is. And we don't have a overinflated market in terms of real estate. People aren't overpaying for homes. They were briefly. But for the most part, San Antonio doesn't do that the way Austin or California would. And so we do. I mean, some of our bids, we lose out for $5,000. You know, somebody else picks it up for just slightly more than us. And so it's a lot of number stuff. And when it comes to the green thing, I mean, people don't care, to be honest.
We don't
talk
about
it. A lot of people don't
care,
but that doesn't matter to the seller anyway. They don't care what we're going to do with it. They want to know what we can offer them.
They want the most
to get rid of it. You know, they're letting it go. What we do with it after that is not usually, they don't care.
So lowered operating costs doesn't matter here. So people, when they're buying property here in San Antonio, they're not bothered about their operating costs of that home, no?
They're waking up to it more than they used to. But on the sales end, the houses sell well when they're more efficient. But not so much, and it doesn't matter to the bank so far. I haven't talked to any lenders at all who have said, well, if the operating costs are lower, then we'll approve them for a higher mortgage. So far, I ask all the time. Nobody said yes.
That'd be an interesting market if you get some tie-in and work with someone on that.
Well, it's a matter of time. I mean, our CPS energy bill just went up by, 4% or 4.5% or something like that just recently. So those are never going to come back down.
Right.
They're always going to be increasing. Mm-hmm. And then you're held captive as well by the CPS.
Right.
Because they have a monopoly almost going on here.
So. And the only way to break out of that in San Antonio is solar. And you're effectively renting your power from CPS at an increasing rate all the time. If you can get solar panels on your house, and I did it. It brought my bill down to zero in April and October, which was great. And you break out of those increases. There's still a portion of your bill that you have to pay in the summer months and stuff, but definitely worth it here in San Antonio.
So what's the ROI on solar now? Because I've been looking,
I've
been following Grand Designs and stuff like that for years and years and years. And I have a real interest in property flipping. Mm-hmm. I want to get there one day. Whether I will or not, I don't know. Perhaps I'll just leave it to the experts. But I'm interested in ROI on solar because it's going to cost you that amount up front.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you're going to get all these free bills, but how long is it going to take until it's paid for itself?
So we actually partner with a company here in San Antonio. They've been around for 17 years. And they have really great programs. They're very good at educating their clients. And the reason that we work with them is because they specifically talk about the majority of their deals, the financiers that they work with and everything, the majority of their loans get paid off within 5 years. And your return on investment is usually on average between 7 to 10 years. So it depends on how you set up your payments in the system and everything. There are, zero upfront costs depending on what your credit score is. And there's a couple of different ways that you can work it. Our favorite way of working it is actually to come in, do a consultation on the house, and get you pretty much half the size system that most solar companies would pay you or try and have you pay for. Because what we want to do is include your future upgrades, your HVAC, your refrigerator, your, washer and dryer are going to get upgraded. Getting insulation put in your walls, getting new windows, those kind of things will dramatically increase the efficiency of your home. And if you get a solar system now for what you're working with, you're going to have twice as much as you would need once those upgrades are in. And so we try and size the system according to your future use rather than your current use. So that way it saves you about half as much on your solar systems, as well as in the future, you're not, sitting there with an overly sized system on top of your roof because your house is now much more efficient.
Well, so, I like the overly sized, if I'm being honest. I mean, let's just get that
you
juice
just
in
pay more.
And sell it back to CPS, right?
CPS fraction
only buys back. It's not, I can't remember if it's a 1-to-1 or it's like a 1 to 50 cents, but they only buy back so much and then they cut it off. You don't get money back from them anymore.
You get a tiny percentage.
There are certain electric companies that don't do buybacks at all. So we try and size according to that as well. So for CPS systems, we try and go about 70% of your average usage. That way, whatever you go over, you're selling back without going over. And so the company that we work with has been really great about this for all of their clients. And right now they're actually able to get like a deal signed. You decide you want to get solar within 7 days. The system is on your roof.
Got it.
Wow.
So you guys are, okay, so 1 to 2 a year is what you're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing otherwise to produce income for the business? Is it these green?
So we do solar for people who are looking to stay in their homes and invest in their homes. If you're going to be in your home for more than 5 years, we definitely would recommend it just because you will see a return on that investment in that amount of time. And the cost of energy is only going to go up. So securing at least part of your bill in that amount of time will definitely save you money. One of the other things that we do is actually a new project that we have going. We did our presentation at a church yesterday for GreenHab Living Legacy. And what that is it's a life planning preparation. Our other partner used to be a hospice nurse. She was an OR nurse. She used to do these presentations like years ago. But we recently had reason to start them up again. So we go in and talk about the medical power of attorney, a living will, organ donation. We try and help people plan those things out, be aware of what's needed for, you know, because when you need them, it's often never a time when you want to go and take care of those things. So trying to be a little bit more proactive about those kind of things as far as life planning also helps people find out who we are, what we do, and it helps us identify people who we can assist in the future if they're planning on, aging in place and they need their home renovated to have doors widened for, wheelchairs or more accessibility options. We'll be able to provide that in the future. And anyone who, is at one of our seminars finds out what we do and they know someone who we can help, then we're able to reach those people more.
Why are you getting into that area?
Community service. So the main reason that we ended up getting into this is we mentioned that
I'm listening.
Back in October, we ended up shutting down our marketing because our father was struggling with cancer and ended up passing early November. And so when you have something like that, kind of a loss in a family business, the whole business just kind of shuts down.
Mm-hmm.
But shortly after his funeral, we got a call from a family friend who her father had just suddenly collapsed and he was on life support and she wasn't sure what to do. And she knew we had just gone through this. And so she was asking us for any kind of advice or help. And we were like, well, we had just gone through this, so we have this whole checklist and all of these different things that you wouldn't normally think about until you're suddenly needing them. And we equated it to trying to plan a wedding within a week with no RSVP list. So if you've ever tried to do something like that, it's absolutely insane. But those are just things that...
Well, then pastors started calling and asking about the checklist, and we just... It became this whole thing where... excuse me. People wound up needing it, and we were like, well, let's just post it on our website. And because we deal with a lot of probate, the things started to link together. There were things we learned dealing with a lot of different probate properties. The last deal we closed, the lady had died in 1996, and her nephew who inherited
it. Was her nephew.
It. Yep. And so trying to prove that, she would have left it to you, however many years later, was just crazy. The things started linking together, and it's a lead source for us. It's more of a marketing thing that puts our information in people's hands when they might need to sell a property, mm-hmm. But at the same time, we're providing useful information that actually benefits everybody in the room. Everybody needs to know it. So.
Well, and that street cred's going to go up, too, because you guys care more about just the transaction. You care about the people.
Right.
I love that.
Yeah.
I just love the approach.
That's my favorite part about this business is often our best deals are the ones we made absolutely no money on, but we got to help someone out of a terrible, devastating situation.
The flip side is you can't do too many of those.
No.
Well, I don't know. They keep sending people our way, so it's not too bad.
Well, I guess if the referral source is good.
Yes.
We talk to contractors because contractors especially, so we had this lady in Buena Vista who gave basically her life savings to a contractor to add on in the back of her house. And what they did was take the money and left all the walls open. There was the structure of a roof, but no actual roof. And it was just open to the world. And she had 2 kids in school. She was working full time. She'd gone through a divorce and somebody told her that because she was divorced, she would not qualify for a home equity loan. She owned this house. and free and clear. And somebody said your divorce wouldn't qualify you. So she was just, she didn't know what to do. So she called a contractor that we knew. He was like, I want to do this work. I can do it for $90,000 or whatever it was. But she doesn't have the money. So we talked to her and explained to her, talk to the bank, ask these questions until you get to this person. They, you know, being divorced is not a reason to be disapproved for a loan. And I mean, people, but you hear stuff and you're scared of rejection from the bank and stuff. And we just walked her through who to talk to. She got the funding and got the house fixed.
Nice.
We didn't make a dime. And, you know, but that was a really good contractor. And a lot of our referrals actually come from contractors who meet people who can't afford the work that they need on their house. So that's a valuable connection for us.
But your reputation is such as you're people who care.
Very much.
And so actually that reputational... Yeah. Aspect is massive and mm-hmm. the business will flow. I've got friends who were doing stuff for a year or two, weren't making, there was no business coming from it whatsoever. Just helping, community-based. And then all of a sudden, and it's just been snowballing. So I love your heart. It's
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Just a question, mm-hmm. family business. Mm-hmm. I worked back in the UK, they would celebrate family businesses. So where I lived in the center of England, there was what's known as the Midland Family Awards, Business Family Awards, or Family Business Awards.
Mm-hmm.
Celebrating family businesses. And it was incredible, lots of different categories, and you hear some amazing stories of just family businesses, multiple generations working together to sell X widget, mm-hmm. you know? But also along the line there, some of the stories they're pretty heart-wrenching of just hearing some of the things that people had gone through. One of the things that really stuck in my mind was one where it said family was more important than business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And actually, we would rather take a hit in the business than take a hit as a family. Mm-hmm. Others were like, well, no, we work together as a family, and these are some of the arguments we have and the battles we have to try and drive the business, and a very different approach. Where are you ladies at?
The business is meant for the family. It cannot come at the expense of the family. That we have family members that have a open invitation to work with us. We have family members that will never work with us. you know, and that's just knowing who is going to work well as a team and, you know, be a part of and support and, you know, have a way to resolve those conflicts so that your business can sustain and your family doesn't crumble.
So if there's people listening to this and they're in a family business and they're struggling right now, because not all family businesses are as nice as what you're experiencing, what would you recommend to them to do?
Counseling. Absolutely. When we are struggling, we have a very dear family friend who is also a counselor, and she will meet with us whenever we need. You know, if we are struggling to communicate, our family life suffers and our business life suffers. So being on top of having that communication and respectful attitude towards each other is the absolute most critical thing, in my opinion.
Nice. I mean, no, Mark, your business is you, but your wife's involved and...
Oh, it's 50-50 straight up. Yeah. So, she's a big part of it.
And is it all harmonious all the time? How do you guys...
No, I mean, I require discipline on a regular basis.
I could well believe that.
It's like, yeah, you know, because I'm more of the driver in the business, you know what I mean? And I'm less so the numbers. So, yeah, I have to be checked. But understanding that I need to be checked and that also, you know, Jennifer, the numbers person cannot drive the business.
Right.
So it's like understanding our roles is super helpful. How do you guys handle that in yours?
We have a chart of roles and responsibilities, who's responsible for what, and we really do stick to it. We sat down, we did a DISC assessment, we had a personality type thing that we did at the very beginning, and then we divided up roles based on our strengths. There are some things that I'm not good at, and it would take us so much longer if I needed to learn it or whatever. So we divvied things up and, you know, we've had conflicts, we've had mistakes, and usually it's our business coach who's our counselor. I really think a good business coach that you mesh well with will help move your business forward and help you hash out most of the issues. but for sure, clearly outlined responsibilities and expectations. And then we did something kind of funny, even though it's just the three of us. We said, okay, if somebody else comes into the company, what rules do we want in place that they would have to adhere to? Well, then automatically we all adhere to them too. We all respect, you know, mm-hmm. those rules. And so we were able to set parameters for the company and behaviors we could do. Like starting out, we were all allowed to do whatever real estate investment we wanted. We could do it in the company or outside the company. And we later changed that because it really becomes the time suck if one person has a project that is taking a ton of time and energy and stuff. So, you know, having treating it like a company, but protecting that family element for sure. I don't think we've ever had a business conflict, even when it cost us money, you know, it was a mistake or anything like that, that we went after each other personally for. So mm-hmm. we are a group that we know we work well together. We have a lot of respect for each other. I would say the one thing we've had to adjust because it's family, and this would probably happen just because of age, is when we leave our mom out of meetings a lot, because if she comes and people know she's our mom, people just talk to her. They defer to her as the authority out of respect. Yep. And so we'll just keep quiet about it. She doesn't look like our mom. So we'll just not say anything. But it's funny because as soon as they find out she's my mom, they'll start talking just to her. And she's like, she knows the numbers.
Yeah, you should talk to them.
So we did have to find a way around that a little bit. But it's more about other people.
Mm-hmm. And Karina, what would you add to that?
Honestly, the other thing I would add is having some kind of a conflict resolution system in place. So having an agreement that, okay, if we have a disagreement about whatever, like, here's how we go through the process of resolving those things. Trying to figure that out when everyone's mad, way more difficult. So having those things set up ahead of time, like really talking through, you know, when trouble arises or when we are having a discussion or when there's disagreement in front of other people, you know, how do you handle those things so that you're still professional and you still get everything done without disrespecting each other? Or looking unprofessional in front of others. So having those things set up ahead of time can help avoid a lot of problems. But it's definitely a learning process, and you're not going to think of everything. But just having that respect for each other is probably going to help you through a lot of those difficult times.
How would you handle firing somebody if you got somebody in the family that's working? Yeah, how would you handle that?
We had to fire someone in October.
We had to fire someone in October, and it made for a very awkward Thanksgiving. Yeah. I will say that.
Right?
But I'm sorry, that's the way it's got to be. Like, if you're not going to be a team player, you cannot play on the team. And, you know, that doesn't mean that you're not family, but... You know.
So having clearly identified reasons why you would be terminated should be important as well in a family business.
Absolutely. And there were reasons that were identified. So it's, you know, it's making sure that we hold each other accountable and we all agree to the rules that we all create. Again, it's respect.
I like the fact you've got personal accountability and things going on here. Did you set this up from the very beginning?
Yes.
There were a few things we tweaked.
Sit down meeting, and everyone was there. Even people who weren't officially a part of the team, but part of our family, were there to hear how the family business would operate.
Okay, I think maybe for people listening into this, what you have gone and done in 4 years, and everything you put in place up front, is superb. And I think people listening to this need to take that on board, because so many places I go into, the house is not in order. I may be a numbers guy, but I'm a business coach and consultant. And so I'm looking at everything. I'm like, mm-hmm. okay, do you have your vision? Do you have your mission? Do you have your processes? Do you have your procedures? Is things documented? Do you have a staff handbook? Do you have a shareholders agreements? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And all that governance side of things, I wrap it all into that basket. Mm-hmm. Do you have that governance? Is it the governance over your numbers? Who's going to be looking at the numbers on a weekly basis, monthly basis, you know, et cetera, et cetera? And so many businesses just do not have that in place. Yeah. And they're not setting themselves up for success. Hopefully now, by having done what you have done in the business, you're in a much better position to be able to cope with those situations, like in mm-hmm. October. Okay, mm-hmm. made for a very uncomfortable Thanksgiving, but you had it in place.
Yeah.
And you weren't scratching around in the heat of the moment, you know,
right.
which is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was something you said a moment ago about the divorced woman who plowed her life savings into having an extension on the house, and that was costly on her. Is there red flags in that kind of situation that you would say to other homeowners, look, before you go and give your life savings over, yes, you need to be checking this, this, this.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I would say hire a contractor who has done work for someone you know. That is the best option. If your neighbor had a kitchen remodel and they were really happy with it, you know, ask them for the name of that person and still check references. Check their, you know, check to see if they're in the Better Business Bureau. Like, do all the checking before you, because you're giving, you know, a car, an entire car's worth of money to a contractor, usually at least. The other thing you can do that I never see, but I really recommend, is put the money in escrow. Most contractors will ask for 50% up front and then they'll take the rest at the end, right? Well, that's a huge, huge chunk for them to potentially take off with, or something to happen with. If you put it into escrow with an agreed upon payment schedule, when you're done with demo, you get this draw. When you're done with stage one, you get this draw. When you're done with stage two, you get this draw. They know the money's there because it's being held by a third party, and you know they can't take off with it because there's inspectors in place. And I wish everyone who was doing a rehab more than about $15,000, mm-hmm, would do that. I think it would just save a lot of heartache, because we've heard all the horror stories and been through some of them ourselves.
What does it cost to put something like that in escrow? What's the fee?
Is it
on
like $2,000 maybe? I don't know.
To open escrow?
Mm-hmm.
No, to open escrow, you can open escrow with like $10.
Well, no, but what do they charge?
I want to say escrow charges like $150 for.
That's
their,
not a lot.
Yeah, it's not. It's That's definitely than less than losing your entire rehab fund, for yeah, sure.
I'm not the escrow person.
You know, making sure that you have a contractor who has a written out scope of work with a timetable. This is how long it'll take. I'll have this many guys working. You know, ideally, you want a contractor who's going to say, you know, not half up front, but like the cost of materials. Like, mm-hmm, that's reasonable. You know, the contractors that we tend to work with have worked with investors in the past. So they're used to a draw schedule. They're used to getting paid weekly for the work done. So, you know, just, again, checking on references, making sure that you're working with a contractor that has an actual contract. And, you know, if it's like $500 to have an attorney write up a contract, you can get a real estate attorney to write up a construction contract for you and have someone who will back it up if that contractor fails. So feel free to bring your own contract to a renovation, as well as having the contractor have their own. You should feel absolutely free to have your own contract as well.
Most people aren't going to know this, what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Here, right. So for people who have zero idea about this, I mean, is it really even fathomable for them to do that? Is it realistic that they're going to do it?
No, I don't see a lot of people calling attorneys to get a contract for their contract.
Exactly.
I disagree. Don't. You don't have to call an attorney to get a contract. You can put a date on it, put out what work needs to be done and what the agreed upon amount is, mm-hmm, and the timeline. And you both sign it. That is a contract that a judge.
Isn't that what contractors do?
LegalZoom? Yeah. But you can use LegalZoom or Rocket Lawyer. Like, you can draw up a contract with any kind of terms, and as long as you both agree to it, it's a legal document.
And sign
it. But most people rely on the contractor to provide the scope of work, the timeline, all of the things, and then they have you sign it. Yeah, this is okay. We understand this is what the thing is, mm-hmm, going to be. Isn't that enough?
I think that you should rely on your contractor to provide the timetable and scope of work and everything else. But you should also have something that says that when you're finished with this work is when I fully pay you.
Oh, yeah.
And this is, you know, someone else, an inspector or someone else, decides what's finished. Not the contractor themselves. Would save a lot of people a lot of hassle.
Yeah, I like the independent inspector thing, too. Mm-hmm. I really think that everybody should do that.
Absolutely.
On any kind of project that's of any yes, significance.
Independent third party to make sure that the work that is being paid for is getting done is absolutely a huge saver.
And an inspector is way cheaper than redoing the work, I promise.
Oh, or hiring a whole new contractor to redo all of that work.
Yeah. And to be honest, when it's closed up in the walls or in a slab, mm-hmm, yeah, you don't know.
You have no idea.
Until something goes crazy wrong.
Yeah. Until you have mold growing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, the foundation's doing this.
Yeah.
So some people could be listening and go, oh, but that's going to cost me a little bit of money up front of that. But then, not being funny, $500 for a contract, a bit of money to set up escrow,
yeah,
and to save yourself a ton of pain down the line, it adds up, doesn't it?
I mean,
makes an awful lot of sense.
Yeah, we've heard about contractors walking away with tens of thousands of dollars, just not even getting started on a job. And, you know, $200 to put money in escrow and the $500 to hire an inspector to come and make sure the work is done versus losing out, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000. I think it's absolutely worth it every time.
Yeah, definitely.
And lots of people will be inclined to be like, well, I'll just DIY it to save money and things like that. But if you're going to get somebody else involved and give your money to them, you want to protect your money. And you, if you haven't worked with them before, if you don't know someone who's worked with them before, you don't know how what the outcome's going to be, then protecting that money, it's just like getting permits. It's just part of the process is to – and I mean, for us, like once you pay for the contract, you're not paying for it every time. Homeowner does need to have a contract or pay for it or whatever, but it's like insurance against the things that could go wrong. And it really, really is worth it. And I told, we were talking the other day, if you're not prepared to pay an attorney upfront for a contract to protect your investment, then you're really not prepared for how much you can lose when things go wrong. Mm-hmm. So it really is a kind of insurance.
Well, that's a good way to say it.
Yeah.
All right. We are out of time. I told you guys it'd go by fast,
it
right?
It did.
So if people want to get in touch with you guys, how do they do that?
210-701-1202. Or you can see us at greenhubliving.com.
Also on
Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn and all the good places.
TikTok at greenhubliving.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you, ladies. I appreciate it. Great conversation.
Thank you.
I think it went by super quick. All right. If you want to catch the latest podcast episodes and catch video version of the show anytime by visiting our website at satalkradio.com. That's going to be it for this one. Great job, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having
us. Thank you.